This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 228 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Yourself?
Oh, mate, excellent. Excellent.
It seems like an eternity since I've spoken to you.
It does, doesn't it? It does. When you get into a regular habit of recording every week, taking 3 weeks off really does feel like an age.
It does. It does. I mean, it feels like I don't even do a podcast. You know? It's like, I remember I used to do that ages ago. So of course, I've been spending the 3 weeks you've been away researching stuff to talk about on the podcast.
Right. But I'll let you off the hook because I've got heaps.
Exactly. And I knew you would. Don't you come back from this big sojourn that you'd be wanting to just blather on for hours upon hours about your bloody holiday photos.
It was great. Like, photographically, it really was great. But outside of photography, you know what I loved about Borneo?
That it wasn't your everyday workday experience?
Well, yes, there's that, absolutely.
Do tell. What did you love about it?
The thing I loved, particularly about Kota Kinabalu, which is the capital of Borneo, or of Sabah, is that it is not your regular tourist mecca. You know, there was no street beggars. You could walk through the markets and not get hassled. You know, mister, buy this. You know,
well, where's the fun in that?
Well, it was actually a lot of fun, the fact that it wasn't like that.
Oh, I see what you're talking about,
You know, the cab drivers were great. They were honest. They took you where you wanted to go and they didn't rip you off and just everything about, like, even to find tourist souvenirs, you had to really make an effort to go looking to find them, which I just loved. I loved that idea.
That is pretty, it does sort of take you back in time a bit, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's isn't that half the fun of experience of travel is to find something that's not the same as everywhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, you talk about the fun of travel, the thing that blew my mind, not that this is the first time I've ever encountered this, but on the last couple of days we stayed at a really nice resort and I bumped into a couple from Perth and this woman said, oh yeah, we've flown up from Perth, we're here for a week, we're just staying at the resort the whole time. And it's like, what? Why? Why would you do that? Why would you fly, 10 hours in an aeroplane to go and swim in a pool at a 5-star resort in a third world country? Like, why not just stay at home or just...
Because it's probably cheaper to do that.
I don't get it.
Many, quite a long time ago, years ago, my sister and her husband travelled around the world for a year. I'm talking, this is 30 years ago or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And 25 years ago. So back in the days of film. And they've been travelling for 6 months around the world. I think they're on the 160th roll of film.
Wow.
Mostly slides. And they met another couple who'd been travelling the same period of time. They're onto their sixth photo.
Oh.
it's like, what? You're doing what? And you've done what?
Six photos.
After 6 months,
I thought you were going to say there's sixth roll of film.
In 6 months.
I just don't get it.
Yeah, some of the most amazing places in the world. Oh, yeah, been to Machu Picchu. Oh, yeah, been there. Took a photo. That was the one for the month. Yeah, we're sort of rationing it out. Yeah, we can only we're doing a shoestring budget. We can only afford the one roll of film for the year.
Oh, man.
Oh, those selfies in the bathroom on that trip. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
So, yeah, it's amazing what some people do, They travel all that way to this incredible place and they sit and swim in the hotel pool.
No, I just don't get that. You know, I mean, thankfully, Kath and I are of the same mindset. You know, I personally love the idea of, if I go to another country, I want to immerse myself in the culture of that place. To the extent that I'm comfortable, you know.
I mean, well, exactly. Yeah. You're eating what?
Exactly.
You're putting that in your mouth.
But you know, if I'm going to go to somewhere like Borneo, you know, I want to experience Borneo. Yes. I don't want to sit by the pool at a 5-star resort. You know, that could be anywhere in the world.
Exactly.
Crazy, but anyway, so
there's a saying where I come from, which is Sheffield in Yorkshire in England.
Right,
and there's naught as queer as folk.
Yes,
and that is there's nothing as weird as people, basically.
Yeah, exactly,
people are strange.
Definitely, there's a song title in that.
At least a Monty Python episode.
Yes. So I made a few notes on the tablet on the way home. Cool.
What kind of tablets were you importing? What were you talking about?
Samsung.
Oh, that's insane.
I've long been of the opinion that I was not convinced about the form factor of a tablet.
Yeah.
Which was why I had the Samsung Galaxy Note as my phone. You know, it was like a 5.2-inch screen, and everyone used to see it and go, my God, how big is that phone? I'd go, well, it's because I don't want to carry a tablet, and I want something that's got a nice big screen, it's good for looking at photos on, that can be a phone, and it saves me carrying a tablet at the same time.
Yeah.
But the weekend before we went away, I was up at my mate Dave's place. We were recording some music for his next album, and he had a Galaxy Note 10.1-inch tablet.
Yeah.
And in his house, he's got the Sonos system for your music. I don't know if you're familiar with Sonos.
I've heard of it, yeah.
And basically what this thing does, like, they're like little, well, not little, they're like quite large speaker docks. And you can buy multiple ones of them, and you set them up in various rooms in your house, and then you can get an app, either iOS or Android, to run on your tablet, which acts as a remote control for these speaker sets, and you can control each set of speakers wirelessly through your tablet, either independently, or you can put them into a group. And so it just blew my mind how convenient it was to have the tablet. While you're sitting there on the couch with some pizza and some red wine, and you go, oh, just turn that music down a bit, and you just grab the tablet and blip, turn it down, you know, and you turn down.
Because the remote controls are so hard to reach for.
Yeah, exactly.
with that slightly larger tablet, it's and so comfortable when you're balancing your red wine on your knee in the pizza box.
So, and over the course of the weekend, you know, there were so many times when it was just so easy to grab the tablet and browse something on the web, look up IMDb or Wikipedia, and it got me thinking, this would be so much easier than trying to lug 2.5 kilos of 17-inch laptop all through the jungles of Borneo. And so when I got home, I said to Kath, you know, this really sort of got me thinking. And it turns out that the 30-pin connector on the Samsung Galaxy Tab and the Galaxy Note tablet-sized devices, you can buy an adapter that's got the 30-pin connector on one side and it's got a female USB port on the other. And I thought, ooh, that's a bit neat, because if you can put a, you know, USB card reader into that dongle and then mount a card reader as a USB device to the tablet, that would theoretically mean that I could then lift photos from my CF cards onto the tablet. So then I jumped onto the Play Store and started looking for an app that would allow me to edit photos in RAW format. And sure enough, there are a few apps out there that do RAW, so I bought a $5 app.
Jeez, went crazy.
I did, I went nuts. So we bought this tablet, you know, 3 days before we left, and got the dongle, bought the app, gave it a try before I left, and just thought, wow, this is really going to, you know, make life a lot easier. Okay, I knew straight away, I knew before we left that I wasn't going to have quite the development power of, say, Lightroom.
For $5?
Out of a $5 app.
You're kidding.
Yes.
Mate, I'd complain.
Disgusted.
To the editors.
Absolutely disgusted I was. So, but I figured, yes, you know, hey, it'll do the job. It'll let me develop my photos on the fly, enough that I can put something up on Facebook while we're on the trip, and then when I get home, I can, you know, develop them seriously in Lightroom. So that's what we did. We just took the tablet and a card reader and left the laptop at home. And I've got to say, I was really happy with the experience. I mean, yeah, didn't quite have the processing grunt of Lightroom, but it did the job. So that was an interesting exercise, you know, a sort of a last minute thing. But things that I learned on this trip, I learned that I'm not as young and fit as I used to be.
You know what?
Yeah.
I've got one thing to say to you, dude.
Right.
That you're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older.
That's right.
That's right. And now you're even older.
That's exactly right.
We could do this whole episode.
We could.
Because now, exactly, isn't it amazing? You know?
It is. My 10-stop filter.
Yes.
Which I have spoken about in the past, how I was never happy with
the, about it. Yeah.
Never happy with the results from it. Yeah. And that all stemmed from the fact that I didn't have the right adapter ring for it, and so I was getting light leakage.
Yeah.
So I worked out a very quick way of assembling my 10-stop filter in my bracket and then ripping... You're going to love this. Ripping off strips of gaffer tape and taping up the gaps. Right. So it was a little bit cumbersome. It took me about 5 minutes to assemble my 10-stop filter every time I wanted to use it, because I had to take it apart in order to put it away in the camera bag. But one thing I found, like once I'd done that, so I was actually getting decent photos through it and not getting any light leakage, one thing I discovered about it is that it is actually about an 11-stop filter rather than a 10-stop filter.
Everyone knows, you know, everything that goes up to 11 is better than go up to 10.
Exactly. Something else that I also found about the 10-stop filter, and I'd be interested to hear from other users of 10-stop filters whether they have noticed this, is that... Mine, which is made by Hi-Stop, an English company, I noticed as I took photos that once, if I got an exposure where the blue channel of the whole photograph was taking up the full width of the histogram, the green channel would be maybe a half stop under, and the red channel would be a stop to a stop and a half under. So I sort of came to this realization that the three color channels expose at different levels, in terms of time. So something I did as an experiment was I did a couple of shots with the 10-stop filter where I would do one shot and I would just meter for the blue channel.
Yeah.
And then I'd do another shot and I would meter for the green channel, and I'd do another shot and I would meter for the red channel. Now, by the time I got the red channel stretching the full width of the histogram, the blue and green channels were blown out the wazoo. What I now need to work out is how you can take those three images into Photoshop and just take the blue channel from one image, the green channel from another image, and the red channel from the third image and composite them together. If anyone knows how to do that, please let me know.
There's my mate Lee Varis,
right.
Showed something along that line.
Oh, really?
To me, yeah. That's how they used to do a lot of stuff.
Would you mind asking him?
Yeah, I'll get right onto it. In other words, remind me tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. I'll send you an email.
Yeah, I'll definitely. If I'm, you know, he was talking technical, so I zoned out. But I do remember him, you know, mentioning, showing different color spectrums and stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. I'll get right onto that in a couple of days or so.
I'll send a request in triplicate.
Exactly, yes. That's a good lesson you learned?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Something else that I made a conscious effort to do was to be more liberal with my adjusting of ISO settings. I've had a tendency in the past to always try and shoot at, you know, 200 ISO or, you know, 400 at a pinch.
Yeah.
Even though I know I can go to 1600 without any major grief, 3200 starting to get a bit iffy on my camera.
I've shot your camera at 6400 and amazed at the results. So
yeah. Look,
it certainly can in certain lighting situations, and if your exposure is
bang on,
good.
Yep.
Yeah, it can certainly do a good job.
Definitely. So that was something I made a conscious decision. I shot up to 16. I didn't go to 3200. but I made a definite decision. I'm going to get out of my comfort zone here and use the higher ISO settings more so than I have done in the past. And I've got to say, I'm not unhappy with, you know, that decision. Having now looked at the images, you know, on my system at home with a decent monitor,
and to simplify your whole process by having that extra latitude to work.
Well, it meant that I could shoot with faster shutter speeds, you know.
Which is good. So, yeah, it simplifies the process.
Yeah,
because changes the ability to actually maybe handhold something.
Yeah, or well, that's the thing. I've come home from previous trips where I've, you know, always tried to stay at 200 or 400 ISO, and shots that I thought I was happy with at the time that I've shot them, when I get home and look at them on a big screen, I go, oh, there's some movement in that.
Yeah.
And it kind of spoils the fun, you know. So I thought,
do you use a loop at all to view your images while you're out
about? No, I don't. I should get one.
You've seriously got to get the Hoodman loop. They are just the bomb.
Yeah,
they will
right.
save you from so many bad photos. It's not funny.
Yeah, right.
So,
wow.
It's you know, I can't tell you, just, you know, when you're out there, just that, it doesn't matter how good your screen is, and you look at something like the Canon 5D Mark III, that's a remarkable screen, but you're out there on a beach in bright daylight, you can't see squat.
No.
You know? And, it doesn't take much just to be that 5% off that ruins the image.
Yep.
You know? I can't tell you how many, and I don't have very steady hands.
No.
So my percentage of blurry shots is higher than most.
Right.
So my need to make sure the shots that I'm happy with are actually any good is critical. So those things have saved me from so many bad photos. It's not funny.
Yeah. Well, I sort of made the decision. I thought, I don't want to come home from this holiday with photos that are a little bit soft or a little bit of motion blur. I would rather have a little bit of noise, you know, and in order to get the faster shutter speed, and know that I can at least deal with that noise with some noise reduction in Lightroom.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to deal with noise than it is to deal with motion blur.
So. Oh, absolutely. I always, in my understanding your camera workshop, you know, when I talk about ISO, it's always, you know, there's two rules I always live with ISO. It's the lowest number possible, but as high as necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
If you stick to that, you know, because at the end of the day, I want the shot. I don't care about the rest. I can do something with later, but I've got to get the shot, and the shot's got to work.
Yeah.
So it's yeah. If we can stick with that formula always, you know, I'll go wherever it needs to as far as ISO goes, and suffer the consequences if necessary.
Yeah.
And we go from there.
Yeah, and I guess that's, you know, something that I learned for myself on this particular trip, and I think, you know, the next time I go away on a trip, I will probably, you know, go the next step and start shooting at 3200 as well when the need dictates.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's, as I said, yeah, much rather have some noise to deal with than, you know, blurry photos.
Exactly. So, especially a trip like that, where realistically, you're never going there again.
Well, we are, but yeah, but I know what you mean. I know
the chance, and you know, there's so many awesome places in the world.
Yeah.
I get stuck to the same thing as well when it comes to travel. That, you know, I've just been to this incredible place, so I want to keep going back to it.
Yeah,
but there's a million incredible places I haven't been to yet, and I've only got so many times to go.
Yeah,
it's very tough.
The reason I say that we will go back was because when we booked this tour. Yeah, because we were in the country for 14, 15 days, and within that we did a 10-day tour with Intrepid. And the Intrepid itinerary originally was a couple of days in KK, which is on the west coast of Sabah. Then we were going inland to Mount Kinabalu, which is the tallest mountain in Southeast Asia. And from there we were supposed to then drive across to the east coast of Sabah to a place called Sandakan. And near Sandakan is a place called Sepalok, which is the home of the largest orangutan rehabilitation centre in Sabah. And that was on our itinerary, along with some other things that were over on the east coast. But about 5 or 6 months ago, some pirates from the Philippines invaded the east coast of Sabah across the archipelago. And the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade issued a travel advisory that was not just, you know, go there but be careful. It was, do not go to this area because the pirates will take, they will kidnap you, you know, they'll take you hostage. So Intrepid sent us a message, you know, probably a month out, saying we're not going to the East Coast because of this conflict. And Kath had been watching the news as we got closer and closer to our departure, and the news of this event just got less and less and less and less coverage. And when we got up there, our tour guide said, you know, yeah, it's pretty much all wrapped up now and been sorted out, but Intrepid are still sticking to their guns and saying it's not safe to go, so we can't take you. But she was a Kota Kinabalu local, and she said the East Coast is amazing. You would absolutely love it.
Of course, we
get home here to Sydney on Friday of last week, and Kath looks on the DFAT website, and the travel advisory's been lifted. And I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. So we've gone, you know what? Yes, you're right. There are so many other great places in the world that we want to go to.
But that is a great place you haven't been to, though, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yes, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, I said, I always fall in the trap. I keep wanting to go back to exactly the same places. It's like, oh, man, you know. And I do. My favourite place to go to chill is the Cook Islands. But I know that if I keep going, I want to go there again. But it's like, you know, there's lots of other places to go.
Exactly.
You know? There's things to do and people to see and people to shoot. And
Yeah,
you keep wanting to go lay on that beach. Yeah.
So,
but see, it's the safest beach for me to lay on because the whole island's surrounded by a big lagoon.
Oh, okay.
And because it's surrounded by a lagoon, they don't get any whales beaching up on the beaches, so the locals aren't, you know, trying to push me back in. Keeps it safe, you know?
That's good to know.
Very important.
Other things that I noticed was that I, again, as I mentioned after the West Australian trip, I used my 50 mil a lot more than I have in the past, mainly because I wanted the, you know, the extra aperture. And I found myself using the 75-300, which, even though it's only a kit lens, I figured, well, I don't have a 70-200 to 2.8. And although this 75-300 is designed for an APS-C sensor and I am using a full-frame camera, it means
you're using a 35mm sensor camera.
Yeah, so I really was only getting 200mm out of it because it was designed for an APS-C. But I used it anyway because I figured, well, you know, it's the longest length I've got, and I figured that once we were out there shooting monkeys and orangutans and things, I was going to need the reach.
Are you sure it's designed for an APS-C sensor? I'd be very surprised.
Yes, it is.
I'd be very surprised with that numbering system.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was the kit lens that came with my Minolta 7D, which was an APS-C sensor.
But the kit doesn't mean the lens was. The lens was sold. You sold an old 35mm lens to go on your camera.
This was a lens designed for digital.
I honestly don't think I've ever seen a 75-300 digital lens.
Well, okay.
It's not the numbering system they use. Yeah, it's like 55-250. Yeah. Because remember, if they're trying to get 75-300, well, the numbering system wouldn't be 75-300 on that lens, because it's like your 18-55. It's not 18-55. It's 28-70.
Oh, okay.
So I think what you've got there, because remember that your 7D is going way back into the early days of digital, and there's lots and lots of leftover 35mm lenses.
That would then suggest that if you're shooting with it on an APS-C sensor, you're actually getting 450mm at the long end.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
So I think you actually are getting 75-300 on your 35mm sensor.
Oh, okay.
And even bigger on anything else.
Yeah, right. So I was
sorry about just to track.
No, that's fine. I would hazard a guess and say that of the 30 or 40 people who were with us at the orangutan sanctuary, I'm gonna be outrageous and say I reckon I was the only person who would have walked away with a decent photo.
You egotistical,
yes.
You're probably right.
Because no one else was shooting with flash.
Okay.
And these orangutans were swinging around in the foliage of these trees a good 15 to 20 metres from the viewing platform.
Yeah.
And they were generally in shade. But the trunks of the trees were copping direct sunlight, so they were just showing up bright white on your photos. Mm. So I'm there with, you know, 300mm lens with a, you know, flash with a guide number of 58, zoomed to 105mm, which was the longest I could zoom it to.
Good, yeah.
With it cranked to full power, and I was just getting enough fill to you know, light up the orangutans in the foliage. And at the time, I was absolutely frustrated because I'd bought these batteries at a service station like an hour before, and they were crapola.
Really?
They were.
Let's just recap this for the listeners, because this is fairly good travel safety tip here. So what you're saying is batteries at an unknown service station in a country like Borneo may or may not be quite as good as something from, say, Australia.
Hey. So it would appear.
No, I've written that one down, dude. It's good to go. I'm putting that right next to don't buy a sausage roll at a 7-Eleven at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's in the same category, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So these things were taking, probably 10, 12, maybe 15 seconds to recycle every time. And I'm just sitting there watching these orangutans carry on like pork chops and going, yeah, come on, recharge.
That just also begs the question, just how do pork chops carry on? All I've ever seen them laying on the plate. Yeah, you can dabble them, you tickle them with a bit of applesauce, they don't do nothing.
Let me tell you something.
They just sit there.
No one in Borneo could tell you because it's a Muslim country.
I say that they're not real big on their pork.
Well, we got there and I went... Got to the hotel the first morning for the breakfast. I went, there's no bacon. What's this beef bacon rubbish? And Kath goes, Bruce, it's a Muslim country. It's like, what? 2 weeks without bacon?
If I'd known that, we'd have gone somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
So that also begs the question, what was the beef bacon like?
Pretty horrible.
Really? Because it sounds so appetizing.
Yeah, no, I'll pass. I said to Kath, I said, I can't wait to get back to Changi Airport at Singapore so I can have breakfast at 5 o'clock in the afternoon of bacon and eggs.
Tell me, at Christmas, do they have spurky rather than turkey? Spammed turkey?
I don't know. In their favour, they do have a lot of seafood and it's really cheap. So the orangutans.
Oyster Patrick's not going to be real popular though.
No, not at all.
But orangutans. Some mention about photography in there. Sorry, Bruce.
Yeah, the orangutan experience was challenging, but a lot of fun. And what was interesting was that I didn't think I'd got a lot of great stuff at the time that I was there and looking at the images on the back of the camera. But once I got home to Gosford and, actually started looking at them in Lightroom, I went, actually, I really got some nice stuff there. And I absolutely went nuts while I was there, despite how long it was taking for the flash to recharge. I shot about 100 frames of orangutans because I figured I'm not going to see orangutans in the wild anytime soon.
Until next time you go to Borneo.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought, well, I'll just go nuts, shoot until these flash, batteries just will not recharge anymore, and then hope to hell that I got something I can use. And thankfully I did. I got about 12 or 15 shots that I'm really happy with. So
that's good.
So that was nice. Yeah. The other monkey adventure was a river cruise, but unfortunately the day we went, it was bucketing with rain. And they did say to us, it was for the proboscis monkeys, and they did say, if it's raining, the monkeys won't be out. We might see a couple, and that was it. We saw a few, but again, they were even further away. They were probably 30 metres from the boat, and even on a 300mm lens, try hand-holding a 300mm lens when you're on a boat rocking in a river. That was fun. And out of that, I got...
But what about that built-in stabiliser and your concern you keep going on about, dude? Come on, stick that to it.
Yeah. Can we hotwire the stabilising engine to the boat?
There should be like a little retractable sensor that you can pull out from the bottom of your camera and stick to objects that are moving, that you're on, and it can sense the sensor from there before it even gets to your camera.
Exactly.
You know, then it's as stupid as that sounds, that's a fairly stupid statement, but it could be kind of cool too.
Then you could shoot with a tripod on the deck of the boat.
There you go.
You'll like this one, and in fact, this will not be new information to you. Something else that I learned is that strangers are generally fairly agreeable to having their portrait taken.
Yes. Yeah. Except the strange ones. The strange strangers.
Well, I found... I don't know if it's because it's such a poor country and they don't own nice cameras. Yeah, I mean, they've all got phones with cameras in them, but it just seemed that everywhere I went with this, you know, honking great SLR, people were just amazed, and they would ask you to take their photo, and they would then thank they would thank you for taking their photo, even though they were never going to see it again. You know, you'd show them the photo on the back of the camera, and they'd give you the thumbs up and the biggest smile, go, "Thank you, mister, thank you," and then off they'd trot. It's like, this is just bizarre.
They're happy campers.
They were.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you would love it. You would absolutely go off.
Off like a prawn in the sun.
Absolutely. And I mentioned, you know, earlier, the last couple of days of the tour, we stayed at a really nice resort.
The one swam in the pool.
Yeah, the one where we went for a swim in the pool. It was one of the Shangri-La group of hotels.
Really?
Which, you know, are beautiful hotels.
Don't they only appear like once every 100 years or something? It's not Shangri-La, it's some other strange mythical place.
Xanadu.
Oh, I checked in and you can never, just like Hotel California, you can check in anytime you like.
You can never leave.
Exactly. Wait for another 100 years.
But so you've got this beautiful Shangri-La five-star hotel resort, and right beside it was a bay that was, it's probably 100 metres across the bay. And on the other side of the bay was this absolute abject poverty fishing village of, you know, wooden board houses all built on stilts over the mud flats.
Yeah.
So at low tide, they've got sand underneath their houses on stilts, but at high tide, they've got the water lapping underneath their houses. And just, like I said, abject poverty. These people just had nothing. They had no waste removal services, clearly, because all the rubbish just got thrown out the door and into the ocean, which was sort of, you know, disheartening to see. But, you know, and I, you know, on the last day, I took a wander across the beach around this bay and into this little fishing village. And I did wonder whether I was being foolish in doing so, because I didn't know if I was putting myself at, you know, in physical danger by doing so. Because I thought, you know, they could just mug me and, you know, no one would know where to find me, because there's so many of these little just common jetties that run between all these houses in a crisscross pattern. You know, you could just disappear in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wandered through there and everyone would just smile and, "Hello, mister, hello, mister," you know, and they just loved having their photo taken. And the kids especially, you know, the kids would come running out and they'd pose for you. And yeah, it was just amazing. I did not have one person, you know, that I said, "Hey, can I grab your photo?" Not one person said no.
Did they speak English? Didn't know what you were saying to
them? Most did, and the ones who didn't, I mean, you just sort of, you know, point to your camera and...
International language of photography.
Yeah,
point
absolutely.
To the camera, point to you, point to them, smile and nod.
Yeah, and they'd all just give you a smile and nod, and, you know, they'd pose for you, and yeah.
You'll love that.
Yeah, like I said, you being a people shooter would have just been right in your element.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, but you've got to admit, though, that connection with those people helped make the trip.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, that just sense of being just for a moment, just for a fleeting moment, part of that life, part of that community.
Yeah.
But it's a joy, it really is.
It is, absolutely. And it comes back to what I was saying about, I don't understand the people that just want to go and sit by the pool. You know, how could you just pass up that opportunity? Yeah, why spend the money to go to a place like that and then just pass up on that?
Well, the technical term is they're idiots.
Yes.
But, you know... But, you know, you can't... Just whilst I'm speaking of idiots, Brigadoon.
Oh, right.
The town
that's the
that
one.
Appears every 100 years. Not Shangri-La Hotel.
Right.
Just slight difference there.
Yes. The only other two things that I had on my list of things that I've learned.
You got more?
Yeah. Be strategic about how much crap you're going to carry when you're walking all day.
Really?
Yeah.
And you're how old? It's taking you this long to get to this position?
Mid-40s, yeah. I took everything with me and for the first day or two carted everything around, and I very quickly got to the realization, it's like, okay, what am I likely to need today and what can I live without? And the tripod was the first thing to go.
First thing to go, for sure.
Because
of course, there goes the 10-stop filter can stay back with us.
Exactly. Because the thing was, we generally walk around through the city, you know, during the day, but we'd go back to the hotel and have a shower and go to dinner and then maybe go out wandering again in the evening. So I figured, I can leave the 10-stop filter and the tripod and that at home, you know, or at the hotel through the day because I don't need them during the daytime. And, you know, I can cart them around at night, you know, for those times when I need them at nighttime.
Absolutely.
But I actually found that's why
I love something like an 18 to 270 zoom, you know, all the real photographers listening to the podcast. Yeah. Apparently we've got seven listeners now, so one of the seven may cringe at that. But something like an 18 to 270 is a carry around lens for a day when you're not sure what's going to happen. It's a pretty cool piece of kit.
Yeah.
You know, because it kind of covers most of the stuff you're going to need. And effectively, it's like 28 to 400 mil in, you know, the old terms.
Yeah.
Because it's got a crop sensor camera. So, kind of a cool lens to lug around. You've got one body, one lens, and a few cards, and away you go.
Yeah.
It's not so bad.
Wouldn't have been a bad option.
and maybe a 90mm macro I'd have to have for some portraits. But yeah, as a general purpose carry around, like I said, especially when shooting the kids, when you don't know what unpredictable thing they're going to do, they're kind of a cool lens to have as well. So
actually, you've just reminded me of something. Of all the lenses that I took with me, the one I used the least is the lens I've always claimed was my favourite lens, which was my 135 prime.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Very. I found myself using my 20mm, my 50mm, and the 75-300 kit lens. And the 135...
So the versatility of the 75-300 sort of took sway?
Trumped the 135, yeah.
So you're happy enough to drop off a little bit of quality, a little bit of versatility with minimal depth of field, for the arty stuff, for sheer versatility and getting more shots.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good trade-off, isn't it?
It was an interesting lesson to learn, or an interesting realization to come to.
Yeah, I was trying to say, look, am I going out to take pictures or am I going out to take photos?
And how do you define the difference?
Well, a picture is I'm going out to capture pretty much what I see.
So photojournalism.
Yeah, and photos is when I'm going out to create something a little bit outside of what
artistic.
I see.
Artistic.
Mm. Yeah, so therefore you've got your filters, your tripod, your lenses that are able to change the way the world looks. It'll be a little bit more of the specialist gear.
Yeah.
So and usually when you've got a bit of time, to be able to spend the time on those images to shoot them, whereas if you're just wandering quickly through a marketplace, something that's a little bit versatile that it has some compromises for sure, but its versatility is key to giving you more chances of more images.
Yeah,
That can be a very worthy trade off. But as I said, photography is such a snob sport that people, we might lose two of our seven listeners if we talk like this much. Which could be good for the bandwidth anyway. Seems that extra seven listener was causing some bandwidth issues, I'm told, during the week. I think more than one person tried to download at the same time, and that just
crashed it. Yeah. and the last thing that I learned. Or not the last thing I learned, but the last thing I put on my list is that streams in jungles look pretty much the same the world over.
Really?
So I decided they weren't worth shooting. I shot one the second day, or the first day out on the tour with the tour group, and here I am, setting up tripods and filters and blah blah, and doing a 60-second exposure of this stream, while the rest of the tour group's wandering off up the track, and I'm yelling out, "Don't worry, I'll catch up with you.
See you in half an hour."
Yeah, and so I've taken my shot and waited for it to develop, and then I've just looked at it and gone, that could be in North Queensland. could be in north of New South Wales, for God's sake. So, so at that point, I thought, no, I'm not going to bother with any more streams in jungles.
Yeah, been there, done that, got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
let's see, if we, to recap, it's, I zoned out through most of what we were talking about. Let's start again. So I guess the big lessons are carry the essential gear, not the gear you, instinctively think is what you should be carrying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cover the gear that's going to give you the best chances of the biggest versatility of shots.
Yep.
Take good batteries from home.
Yes.
good safety tip. I noticed on your Facebook you bought some El Cheapo memory cards whilst you're over there as well.
I did.
Yeah, possibly not the best.
It didn't fail me. That memory card did not fail me.
The last word to that is yet. You know, it only will on the most important of images.
Yeah.
If all that card's got on at the moment is photos of streams in jungles, it's not going to fail. But one critical shot, that's like it's gone. Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask people, I guess, to shoot them. You may be very surprised by the responses, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wondered at the time, is there something about the fact that you are obviously a tourist because you're a Westerner in a predominantly Asian country that gives you a little more latitude? I don't think I would feel as comfortable wandering the streets of Sydney where I could be just a local with a horrible ulterior motive.
That's what I do all the time. We had a North Melbourne photo walk here a couple of weekend or so ago.
Yep.
And I challenged everyone at the beginning of the day is to shoot someone in the street.
You're right.
Whilst we had two models with us and we're lugging this guy and girl around, but wanted everyone, and not everyone did, but quite a few did. And we got some great faces.
Yep.
Yeah. We met some interesting people. Yep. I don't think we got said no to by anybody.
Yeah, right.
And that included going up and setting up flash guns and softboxes in a very busy cafe.
Wow.
During lunchtime, and shooting their bar person whilst they were trying to taking them away from making coffees to stand in front of the bar to shoot them. Yeah.
There was no
notes. Yeah. So, as I always say, what's the worst someone can say?
Exactly.
No.
Yeah.
And I know where you live. Those kind of things. But when they say yes, look at the shots you've got to remember now.
Absolutely.
It's killer. And everywhere I travel, I just can't not. In fact, even driving home from a workshop on Saturday, I saw this guy walking up the street with this incredible face, and all I had on me, had the Fuji X Pro 1 with a 60mm macro lens on.
Yeah.
And I'm driving along, and I'm absolutely exhausted. I just want to get home and see the kids. And it's traffic everywhere, but this guy's gone past and, I've got it. And so
you just pulled the handbrake on in the middle of the street.
Well, I was tempted, but no, I did the right thing. I did a U-turn across the double white line, zipped up the street to try and find somewhere to park, spin around. By the time I'd gone the 100 metres around in the bend, pulled over, parked, got out of the car with the camera, looked around, disappeared.
Couldn't find him.
Gone. Yeah. So I'll keep looking for him because he had a great face. But, you just tell by just his demeanour walking up the street that he'd be a yes guy, you know.
Yeah.
Can I shoot you? Hell yeah.
Yeah,
he'd be right into it. So it's so much fun, you know.
Yep.
So very cool.
So I could tell hundreds of stories. But we'd be here forever. But it was just a fantastic trip.
As much as we'd love to spend the next next little while listening to that, I'm sure some anecdotes will pop up over the next few episodes.
More than likely,
listeners, maybe what episode are we up to, Bruce?
228.
Yeah, maybe if you give us till 240, guys, before you come back and check in again, you might have got past them all. If we're in luck. I'm prepared to take one for the team, and I'll listen to them all whilst you go off and come back in 12 episodes. Lovely stuff. We got asked a question.
Oh, my goodness, did we really?
If you want to maybe cover that
I'm not logged in, so I'll leave it to you.
This lovely person called Belinda Coulson. She's just gorgeous.
Oh, hi, Belinda.
She's fantastic, isn't she? Anyway.
What did she ask?
She wants to know something about, it's going to hit. She goes, she's talking about me. She's seen some of my photos from workshops, and she loves the character that I managed to pull out of people's faces. I want to know, how do you direct everyday people, which kind of links into what we're just talking about talking to people in the street.
Yep.
How do you get to direct everyday people rather than models to give you a look that's other than I'm on Instagram, or, you know, this is for my 12th birthday party, or whatever face that people want to give you. And Belinda's targeting teens and their mums.
Right.
Possibly the hardest audience you're ever going to find, I have to say.
Exactly.
The first thing I ever ask someone to do when I've got them in front of my camera is not smile.
Right.
The last thing I want someone to do when they get in front of a camera for me is to smile.
Right.
Because that's the mask.
Yep.
Yeah, and if I want to shoot them and get just a fleeting hint of them,
yep,
that can't be there unless something happens during the shoot. You know, when I play at the if it's a bloke, you know, you're a tiger, and get the natural reaction. My standard line to women is, look, please don't smile in my photos. I'm a married man, and I'm not used to seeing women happy. And then you get a natural reaction, right. And you shoot that. But anything else is a mask. So the clue always is, don't smile. But the other biggest clue is, don't get suckered in by the face. We get excited about the person we want to shoot, and we forget that it doesn't matter how great they are. If they're not lit well, they don't look good in the photo.
Yeah.
Or as good as they could have.
Yeah.
So every person I ever shoot, and I was talking to someone about this the other day, about, you know, when you're in places like India or whatever, and someone asks you to pay them for their photo.
Yep.
And they asked me, how do you feel about that? I said, I'm more than happy to do that. Absolutely. Right. Always more than happy to do that. But I always have the phrase, I say, if I'm paying, I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that means if I'm paying you money, I'm saying where we shoot the shot.
Yep.
And I want to move you from where you may be, unless it's awesome, but more than likely it's not,
yep,
to where I want you to be, to make sure that the light
is right.
Is doing what, the light is right. The light's doing what I need it to be.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've almost always decided that before I've even approached, as I'm walking towards someone, I'm actually not really looking at them, skittering around. So if they say yes, where do I shoot them?
Yeah.
If you say yes, where can I pull them to? Well, that's within a reasonable, expectable proximity.
Because you've already seen their face. You've already decided they're worth shooting.
Exactly.
It's now, it's where do I want them?
That 20 feet as I approach them, whereabouts in this reasonable proximity is the place that's going to give me the best chance of bringing something out of that image. So it's a combination of light,
yep,
and expression, and trying to get through the mask.
Yep.
And that's not easy, especially with somebody you've only met 40 seconds previously. it's hard to break through. We as humans put up barriers all the time. My barrier is my humor, and my outgoingness is my barrier to letting people not know who I actually am.
So with that sort of stuff, when you approach a complete stranger in the street, you've seen a face that's intrigued you, and you think, this is someone I want to shoot. How much time do you spend on chit-chat with that person?
Well, I like to do what I call my 60-second portraits.
Right.
That's meet them, greet them, ask them, move them, shoot them, say goodbye to them, and thank them.
In 60 seconds.
60 seconds or so,
Wow.
Realistically, it would never go more than 2 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Because
I have heard some people say, you really should, spend some time with the person, get to know them, talk to them, find out who they are, what they do, blah, 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 blah. Hey?
But they don't want that. They're off. If they're out and about, they're probably hidden somewhere, I'm not sure I've ever related the story that I met an old man who lives in a field not far from my place.
Right.
And I, incredible face, his name is Ian, and I asked to shoot him, and it took 4.5 hours of him talking to me before we actually got round to the shoot. That's my longest to date. So I always say, be careful what you ask. But I was driving past his place the other day, his field with his vehicle, and it's his house to him. And I saw him again, and I popped over just to say g'day, because it's been pretty cold, and see how he's been faring, because he's late 70s.
Wow.
And we had a quick chat, and he was actually off the house. Someone was coming to pick him up and take him out to the dentist. He just had 25 teeth removed, which surprises me, because when I shot him previously, I wouldn't have thought there was that many in there.
Right.
but he said, come back again, and I'm in the front vehicle because the whole field is full of old army ambulances, right. Army jeeps, and all sorts of stuff. So I'm going to go up in a week or two, and
so yeah, he can pick a different bedroom every night.
Well, yeah, except they're all full of stuff. He's one of those hoarders that just hoards absolutely everything, yeah. But I'm going to go up all my flash gear, you know, soft boxes, the whole kit and caboodle in a couple of weeks and do a full shoot with him.
Yeah, right.
And he said yes. And it's amazing the sort of, you know, what you can build out of the, these little funny relationships you can build. But generally, you know, I said, you know, I'm not really that interested in them anyway. You know, there's some people in this world who pretend to like people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of them. So, you know, I'm not really interested in their life story. I just want to shoot their head. Yeah, so not only do I want, you know, them, okay, I'm caring that they should get on their way and do their thing. I don't want to sit around for 10 minutes and talk to them.
Fair enough.
I'm a sociopath. I don't care about you. I just want your head. Yeah. So that's it. Yeah, it needs to be as long as it needs to be, and sometimes yeah. But 2 or 3 minutes is a long time to talk to somebody. Yeah, if you've just met them, and yeah, it's actually a long period of time to get past the basics of who are you, what do you do, where are you off to, yeah, where are you from, is that a goiter inside of your neck, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's a long time to chat to someone, and. And then it's best to get onto that shooting straight away. And you know what? If you haven't built too much of a rapport, there can be a sense of vulnerability in front of the camera.
Right.
Maybe that's an expression. You maybe sing a little bit more of them again.
Yep.
Because it's showing the uncertainty of them in life and all this sort of stuff. And a friend of mine, Beth, years ago said to me, she brought her ailing father-in-law to me to have his portrait done. For the reason that she says I always bring out the person rather than the face,
right?
Yeah, and so she said, well, can you shoot him? And I did, and we've got a beautiful shot. And he unfortunately died, end of last year. A beautiful guy, my mate Noel. But then I said to Beth, but I've got to shoot you too because you're haunted. Yeah, and she's had this life that has worn her away somewhat. While she's still very vibrant, there's still that inside, and you've got to try and capture that in the photo. You've got to try and pull that out somehow, and that's got to be about breaking down the masks, and the masks are the smiles, and they're trying to be nice, and they're trying to be somebody else.
Yeah.
So, Belinda, I'm not sure that helps you at all, but the key point is, we are photographers, which means we write with light. You know, we write with light, and we shape with shadows. And if we stick with that as our priority and then make sure we put the thing that we want to shoot in that light and use those shadows to show the structure and the character,
yeah,
job's mostly done for us, really. You know, we just aim the camera and go click.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than getting our exposure right, of course, which is, yeah. Yeah. Realistically, it's a two-minute job to learn how to get your exposure right if you don't know how to do it. So it's a two-minute lesson. And so if you've gone through your photographic career, your hobby for years and don't know how to spot meter in manual to get your exposure right, yeah, get on YouTube. Yeah, it's a 10-minute lesson, and you'll have a skill you'll love for life. You know,
totally.
But we always get scared about learning something new, because what if it's too complex or I don't know how to do it or whatever it may be. You know,
I love learning new stuff personally.
It's always, and that's the great thing about photography, of course, it is a lifelong journey of learning, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, just shared a few things that I learned just from this one trip alone that, you know, I hadn't, you know, stumbled across prior to this. So, yeah, you can always learn.
Absolutely, yeah, because imagine how boring would photography be if you didn't.
Yeah, it would get very repetitive.
Yeah, but that's, again, if you look at from a couple of episodes ago, I talked about, you know, those slow shutter speed shots I did when we were up in Sydney.
Yep.
Because there's a certain amount of boredom if your vision you see in your head is something you can create in your camera all the time is as you see it.
Yeah.
If you have this idea and then you can make it happen fairly reasonably easily.
Yep.
Where's the challenge, or where's the unpredictability and playing with, you know, just always be trying stuff. Keeps that unpredictability, keeps that joy and that pleasure, and that's all part of the learning. So
yeah, totally. Excellent. Well, I have got a couple of emails sitting around, but I think we'll leave them to next week.
Yeah, it's a late night for us, dude, and it's past 10 o'clock. It's past me bedtime.
It is. Now, you were out this evening for your daughter's birthday?
Yes, my little Miss M just turned 6 today, so sweet little thing that she is.
Gets by very quickly, doesn't it?
Oh, man, yeah, she's already 7'3". I mean, she's growing so fast. She's a big kid, yeah. No, she's rocketing along and, you know, developing as kids tend to have that habit. Yeah, why is it that they change so fast and we seem to keep starting the same?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's done. Tomorrow night I've got, as Belinda stated on her Facebook page, she's coming along tomorrow night to my Alan Crom Masterclass lighting event.
Oh, that's this week.
It's at Dallas Brooks Hall down here in Melbourne. So at last I heard they had 500 people coming.
Wow.
Fairly big event when they predicted 150.
Oh, geez, really?
Slightly oversold, just slightly. Yeah.
So they've moved it to the Melbourne Convention Hall.
It's who knows what's going to happen. I'm kind of praying for rain, yeah? Because if it's raining, people don't want to come out. You know? It's a free event, yeah? No one values free.
And when's the Sydney one?
The Sydney night one was last week.
That was. I was going to say, I thought that was first. Yeah, right. And yeah, how did it go? Last week.
Look, from what I've seen, the few photos I've seen on Facebook from behind the scenes, apparently went pretty well. And,
right.
But that's pretty much all I've heard.
Oh, you didn't do it?
No. So that was done by the guy that did it.
His name escapes me.
that's exactly what it was. It was done by exactly the person that did it. Daniel Lynette. Lynette, that's him. Oh, they got a smoke machine, did they? It's pretty nice. Where did they get smoke machines from?
Oh, you can buy them at Aldi for $30.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know that might take mine long now. And thought about that. Because his photos look better than mine, so I might have to do the same thing myself.
Yeah, well, why not?
Goodness gracious me. Well, I'm under pressure now. These photos are pretty good.
Cool.
Funny stuff.
All right, mate. Well, good to talk to you again.
And you. Settle into your workaday routine again, and we'll chat next week.
Yep. Well, I am in the process now of writing up a blog of all of the daily events of our time in Borneo.
Terrific. I look forward to not reading it.
Yeah. Well, you can look at the photos. You don't have to read the text.
Yeah, I don't listen to our podcast. Why should I read your blog?
Exactly. All right, mate. You have a good week.
All good. Terrific, mate. Take care.
See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.